The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
So joining us this week to place his reads on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf is, you'll know him, from your TV screens, political correspondent with Virgin Media and author Gavin Riley. Gavin, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Now, you're starting with it. I have to say, I hadn't predicted this one as your first choice, your favourite book of all time.
Okay. I'll explain why it is and why I like it. I'm kind of intrigued as to why it might surprise you.
I suppose
you,
maybe I'm just going...
Am I too much of a stereotype nerd?
He wouldn't read a book about soccer.
I suppose I expected politics or current affairs or history.
Well, there's a fair amount of those in the other selections, and I'm sure we'll get to them in a couple of minutes. But my favourite book of all time is Full Time, The Secret Life of Tony Cascarino, which is the footballer's autobiography ghostwritten by Paul Kimmage, and it means a lot to me for both content and kind of sentimental reasons. Sentimentally, because I remember getting it as a Christmas present from my aunt, who's also my godmother. I think I was around 13 or 14, had kind of aspirations of becoming a journalist, but actually didn't know whether I wanted to do news or sport. And getting a copy of the book and discovering that it was signed by the author, and then discovering very belatedly that Paul Kimmage was actually a pretty elite, like, sports writer.
Really good writer.
So, yeah. So having a signed copy of a book by him was pretty brilliant. A lot of people might remember this book because it was the how it came to light that Tony's mother had been adopted. So he technically wasn't qualified
to play for Ireland. So
under the granny rule, by which he had an Irish grandmother, his Irish grandmother was not actually his grandmother biologically because his mother had been adopted. So he wasn't actually qualified to play for Ireland. And this emerged in the course of publicity for the book. But the book is particularly striking because, for me anyway, it was the first time that I'd read a book ostensibly written in the first person about how much of a grind professional sport can be. Because, you know, when you're a child and you're a young teen, you sort of go, God, wouldn't it be great to be playing football for a living?
Just play football.
Because you love playing football anyway, and imagine just getting paid loads of money to do that. Wouldn't it be great? But it goes through all of the difficulties that come with that. For example, the physical toll that it places on your body. And he talks in very graphic terms about the anti-inflammatories he has to take. And, you know, when you become a journeyman and you're trying to get yourself a new deal and you're dyeing your hair to try and mask how old you are and making yourself look a little bit more youthful. The mental toll of it all, because he openly talks about there being a voice in his head that's basically sort of talking him down from the idea of, you know,
I think that is really common in sportsmen. If you listen to them interviewed or if you read anything they write, all of them have a monkey on their back. Or maybe not all, that might be an unfair, but there's
Messi probably doesn't, or Ronaldo, or
if you listen to Ronan O'Gara, or there's loads of them who seemed to be battling in their head as much as on the pitch.
Yeah. Particularly in golf as well, because I'm always amazed by like how much of a psychological torture it seems to be a professional golfer. But footballers have that too, particularly when you're of the standard of Cascarino, where you're good but you're not world class. So you still feel like you have to scrap a bit to get where you're going. So he talks about all of that, talks about infidelity and then having to move between England.
I mean, the thing about Tony Cascarino, and maybe this is why the book is so good, he is so honest.
Yes.
He's incredibly honest.
Yeah, there is no dressing up about it. Kimmage does a phenomenal job of placing himself in Cascarino's skin and presenting it in his own words. And I remember being the first book that I'd read that really deconstructed not alone the glamour, but also just how, like, frankly honest it was about some of the misery.
I think it's very interesting you read it at 13, 14, because it probably also was something to do with the age that you were, that this was an insight into the real lives of adults and the real, you know, because I know I was a big reader at that age too, and I would have loved books, and I actually always loved getting a book for Christmas because I would sometimes just go up to my room for hours and read a book. But you know, when you're 13, the adult world is still a tiny bit of a mystery. But now you are hearing about infidelity and stress.
Don't people say that the culture that you consume when you're 13, like the music that you listen to at 13, is your favorite music?
I think it's 14 actually, but you're completely right. The bands you liked at 14 are the bands for life.
And I remember because I got this book at Christmas, I went to boarding school in Mullingar and St Finian's, and I didn't have any big exams coming up, so I spent a lot of January and February reading the book ostensibly in study hall, keeping it buried, and just ploughing through it that way, and it being so engrossed by it, you'd nearly rather not get up for a break when everyone else is rather sit down and keep going.
That's a good sign of a book, isn't
always
it?
Always a good sign, yeah.
And have you gone back and read it since you were at that age?
I've read it twice since, because it's one of those things where I love it so much I don't want to go back and read and discover that it wasn't as brilliant as I thought it was the first time.
Don't take it from me.
But I have read it a couple of times since, and it does stand up. And like, in a way, it was such a shame about how much of the story around the book became about his mother being adopted and his lack of a birthing.
Yeah, it was
because it was an interesting news line.
Yeah.
But so much of the book just about the gore of it and how his life in Scotland and his life in England being a journeyman and then moving to France and having this kind of this Indian summer when he was sort of later in life.
Well, that, he had this incredible Indian summer in France and kind of reinvented himself as a player and maybe as a person a little bit as well.
Yeah, well, it seems that way because, again, the infidelity that he talks about when he's playing in England and Scotland, he meets his new wife, who I understand he's no longer with anyway, but that he meets his new wife and he's got this first flush of love again with a new child in France, and everything about his life just seems to be at least end on an idyllic note in the book, even if it didn't work out that way in real life.
I think what I love about Tony Cascarino, you know the way some people do well in life and they're still always moaning and whining about it, Tony Cascarino is one of those guys who realises he's kind of been lucky in life. And he kind of embraces that, and I love the way he's still see him in ads.
Say that as well about Rod Stewart, but I think you're right.
Rod Stewart does radiate gratitude for everything he's got.
He knows it could have gone a different way.
It's a beautiful quality in a person that they have arrived somewhere good in their life, and they know it. I don't mean know it in a cocky way. They know it. They're like, yes, how good is this? How lucky
am I?
I think there is something nice as opposed to being miserable about being well off.
Which is a lovely quality when you're kind of finishing up the book, because you could open it, as I did as a 13 or 14 year old, impressionable and thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to be playing football? And he spends a lot of the book cataloguing how horrible it is and having to go and get his cartilage scraped off his knee every couple of months so that he can keep going. And just the misery of it all and the physical toll and how that translates into mental anguish. And yet at the end, he is still like, but God, it was a great journey.
I am coming back to that idea of a book. You know, when you're a kid and you're 13 and adults talk to you in a certain way, they sort of talk down to you a little bit even at 13, and you get a kind of a filtered version of their life. You read a book, so it wasn't designed for 13-year-olds necessarily. So you got I bet you that's part of this, that you actually got spoken to like an adult in this book.
Yeah.
Because this book was not aimed at kids. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Without meaning to sound too lofty, it sort of presents like dimensions of life that you just don't ever consume otherwise.
And I'm sure that's part of this, but I'm always fascinated, and I say this every week in the bookshelf, that when we have a guy on the bookshelf, we almost always have a biography. Men love a biography. And I think it's really fascinating that you just said, I can't believe you picked that. Because you, of all people who are so interested in politics and sport and history, would be a little bit like a Gavin.
I do love a biography, actually. One thing that I only realised as I was putting down my choices for this is that I actually read so little fiction, that basically, unless it's a fiction book, it's published by someone that I know and I've got a reason to pick it up.
On this show, as entrepreneurs, we often talk about the courage it takes to start something from scratch. Every successful brand begins with a vision, a purpose, and someone willing to take a chance on an idea. And while every founder's journey is different, many share the same determination to overcome obstacles, innovate, and build something meaningful from the ground up. That's why I always enjoy hearing founder stories, because behind every product is a real person who has invested time, energy, and passion into building something meaningful. Walmart is helping customers discover products from thousands of small brands while giving founders opportunities to grow, reach new communities, and share the stories behind their businesses. By making it easier to discover these brands, Walmart helps connect customers with innovative products and the entrepreneurs whose passion, resilience, and creativity help bring them to market. So whether you're an entrepreneur yourself or a dream driver looking to be inspired, it's exciting to see more opportunities for small brands to be discovered. Visit walmart.com to learn more about the small brands and founder stories available in your community.
Last question on this. Like you talked about at the time you were wondering about journalism. Did it inspire? Did it encourage you to go down that road?
I think a little bit. I certainly remember, like, not very visibly thinking, but I do remember like sitting back and admiring that and going, God, isn't it a real talent to be able to like just translate that out, and admiring that, and never thinking that it was a thing I'd ever be able to do with any great quality. So I don't know if it instilled a particular desire, but definitely I appreciated journalism and writing so much more after having my mind opened to ways of life that I couldn't have conceived of first before I'd read that, you know.
Gavin, you're currently reading?
I'm currently reading two things, which I understand is actually common enough for contributors to this line. But I'm doing a thing where I'm reading one on paper and I'm listening to an audiobook separately. So if I'm in the car on the way in and out of work or going to appointments, I can read one thing while I'm digesting another. So the one I'm reading in print is a book called The Owned Continent by a journalist from Brussels called Dave Keating. And it's all about, and it's become very timely, very suddenly. It's all about how Europe has basically found itself as this kind of facile.
The tagline is how to free Europe from American military, economic and cultural dependence.
So not relevant at all.
That does seem quite timely.
And here's not only is it timely, it was published before the crisis at the start of the year where Donald Trump was openly talking about invading Greenland and basically invading the sovereign space of an EU country. So it's become very, very timely there. But Dave is a brilliant writer. He has a very good Substack, which I'd absolutely recommend to anyone who's into that kind of thing. Demystifying Brussels, but also being very frank about the failures of the EU, given everything that's going on in the world. And this is a very good study about how Europe has come to be basically a servant underling of America, where you can't do anything you'd like economically, militarily, commercially. You can do very little without America's nod, how it's come to be that way and what you could do to address it.
And America is also a running theme through the second one you're listening to, the audio.
Unwittingly. The other one is, the one that I'm listening to is called Ringmaster, Vince McMahon and the Unmasking of America by a journalist called Abraham Riesman. Vince McMahon, as people may know or might remember, is the face and the founder and former CEO of WWE, previously WWF, a pro wrestling magnate. So it's part.
Okay, now you're surprised. Now you're surprising me.
Well, when I'm not watching him on the Tonight Show on a Tuesday and Wednesday, actually, a lot of how I tune out at nighttime is by watching WWE, because it's sort of chewing gum for the eyes.
You just got to allow yourself to fall asleep
for it. Yeah. Only, of course, when I'm not watching you on a Tuesday and Wednesday, I should stress. But so it's partly the biography of how Vince McMahon became from very humble beginnings to this self-made billionaire, where he constructed almost this industry entirely single-handedly. But there's a subplot to it, which is how Donald Trump got a taste for having people eating out of his hand that way, because Donald Trump is quite pally from business circles with Vince McMahon. In fact, Vince's wife, Linda, is still a member of the American cabinet. She's been Secretary of Education. She's the only member who's been there for all of Trump's both presidencies. Wow.
She's the highly unqualified Secretary of Education.
Who's now having her department dismantled from underneath her feet.
Which is what she said she wanted.
Such is the way of life.
Bizarre, okay.
But what a lot of people don't appreciate about Trump's descent into politics the way that he is now is partly because through his relationship with Vince McMahon, he had an on-screen arc where he was actually involved in one of the WrestleManias. And suddenly Donald Trump, who was already a big deal through The Apprentice anyway, suddenly realized that if you just say the right thing in a packed house, that you can have people eating out of your hand and learning the techniques of pro wrestling and how they've ultimately become applied to how politics is conducted in America, where there's so little of shaking.
Ringmaster does seem to be the appropriate term, I would imagine.
Yeah, so it's a very good combined sort of thesis or meditation on how wrestling came to be in the state that it is, but also how Donald Trump came to understand managing the media in ways that he has, and how it's all ultimately what they call kayfabe, the idea that you have wrestling storylines that you never admit are only storylines that are all fiction. But that's a part of the way in which Donald Trump has learned to manage the media.
It is fascinating, but also depressing.
It is.
Let's get to your honourable mention before we go. And you're a huge Oasis fan, I think.
Yes,
right,
enormous. Yeah, so much so that I think I'm still paying off the credit card debt for going to see them twice last year.
Did you buy the Bose Oasis jersey?
No, because I'm a committed UCD fan and I would never wear another team's League of Ireland shirt. The honourable mention is called Take Me There, Oasis the Story by a journalist called Paul Mather. This came out, I think, in the summertime of 97, just before Be Here Now. But Mather had embedded access with the band for a full 2.5 years. So he's not like an NME person who gets a good sit-down interview. He was literally with them for the whole making of Definitely Maybe, the tour through to Morning Glory, and the tour through America.
So he saw some things.
He saw some stuff, which is great. And this is what I love about the book, because I'm always a little jealous that I wasn't 5 or 6 years older when Oasis were at their pomp, because I was 8 for the summer of Morning Glory. And a lot of the cultural significance of it all passed me by. But the book is brilliant because it captures the hedonism, just the madness of it all. Like one summer where Noel just decides he doesn't need to sleep anymore, so he'll just consume cocaine every night and never need to sleep. Little bits like that, the American tour falling apart, the real reality of all of that, their interactions with other bands, the truth of their beef with Blur. All of it is captured in really vivid, gritty
what
detail.
What is the truth of their beef with Blur?
That it was a little bit storyline. But it's a brilliant read that really just captures the whole truth of all of that.
And you, of course, are hugely musical, Gavin.
Yeah. Well, I don't know hugely, but certainly...
I've heard you play the piano.
I learned guitar at the altar of Gallagher, though, so it speaks to me a little bit. But having not got to experience a lot of that firsthand, the book does an incredible job of like really making you feel like you were living through it all through the eyes of someone
absolutely amazing.
Was.
Some excellent reads there.
Absolutely. I'm going to give an honourable mention as well to The Secret Life of Leinster House, Gavin's book.
Very
which
kind.
I genuinely... And I actually think I've said this on the blurb on the back page
you
of
did,
your book.
Indeed, yeah.
If you want to understand how Leinster House works, how Irish politics works, this is the is the one book you should read.
That on the bookshelf as well.
Yeah, let's do that.
Great soul.
Thank you so much, Gavin, for coming in. I'm delighted. And thank you for those excellent choices.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.